It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
We're back. Still talking Penn State, Maryland on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Dustin Hawkinsmith, Greg Pickle, Todd Sadowski from Fox 43 joins us once again. We're coming to you from Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. I'm going to say it again and again and again. I think I've conquered. I'm not getting tongue-tied by that, so I'm going to enjoy that.
Want to know this week, Dustin. Want to know.
So far. Let's not jinx anything. We talked a lot in the previous segment really about bigger picture type stuff. The senior day with Trace McSorley and the way the whole season felt and the way that it ended on a positive note. We will get into some of the more detailed stuff in the game, but I do think we have to discuss just briefly bowl scenarios, which, you know, if you rely on the pundits out there to do all the math and to understand the many complexities of it, it looks like really just two options are emerging now. The New Year's Six bowl game doesn't look like a possibility. I don't know if anything can change based on conference championship games, but Citrus or Outback look like the two options there.
I mean, it's gotten messy at this point. I mean, they're number 12. They could go up. They could go down. What is Washington State do? What does Washington do? What does Texas do? I mean, I think the Tuesday, it's really hard to talk about the bowl projections without knowing what the committee does Tuesday night, because if Penn State's inside of that top 12, they're not guaranteed a New Year's Six bowl, but they'll certainly be in the running for it. But you're right. To your point, Dustin, the people that are paid to do these projections basically say no shot, which I think is probably a surprise to a lot of people, because simply, excuse me, when they were put number 12 last week, it basically opened the floodgates for Penn State to be able to stay in that New Year's Six bowl positioning. So, yeah, we'll see. I think the one thing is that the committee, you know, there's a lot of people, I've gotten a couple emails from people to say, really want to book my travel early. I really want to try and get it done with. You know, the holidays are coming. I want to get that money spent. Where should I book for? And there's no good answer unless you want to book for somewhere in the South and then just plan the drive to either Atlanta, Tampa, or Orlando, because at this point, it's a mess.
Well, that's, you know, the projections last week were based on the fact that Michigan would beat Ohio State. So right. Ohio State beating Michigan threw everything off for the Big Ten. So, you know, Penn State's chances of being in a New Year's Six bowl were pretty much based on the fact that, okay, they would be the second Big Ten team right. in the leftover New Year's Six bowls with, you know, Michigan advancing to the playoff. Now Michigan's only got two losses, so they're going to grab up one of those New Year's Six bowls. Look, it never hurts Penn State to have the alumni base that they have. It never hurts to have the TV ratings and the draw that they have. Washington State, to me, is the key. How far do you drop a team that loses at home and basically, you know, incredibly, you know, snow conditions?
It was fun on the watch.
Yeah, and lose the Apple Cup. So, but, you know, the gap, the funny thing is the gap with the committee, usually when they're in this situation, somebody loses and they're at 8 and they lose a game at home by 13 points, they're going to fall down a decent amount. But the gap between like the top 10 and then 11, 12, like Florida, Penn State had 3 losses.
Yeah.
And Ohio State sitting at 10 with only 1. So the only team with 2 losses was LSU.
Right.
And, oh, they lost a 7 overtime game at Texas A&M in which they thought they won in regulation. Can the committee really penalize them that much? I mean, the fact of the matter is Penn State doesn't necessarily deserve a New Year's Six spot when you look strictly at who they beat. They don't have any wins that jump out at you. Pitt certainly doesn't help. You know, they lost again, so they have 5 losses. And they have no wins over any ranked teams or what – you suppose will be ranked teams in the college football playoff committee in the top 25. So there's nothing wrong with the Citrus or the Outback, but I think they still have a chance at the New Year's Six based on where Washington State will fall. If they happen to potentially drop LSU behind them, I don't know. We'll see. But I tell you what, a Penn State LSU Citrus would be a pretty good game.
Two good teams there. And I think that's what you're ultimately going to get is a top 15 versus top 15 matchup in almost any of these scenarios. So for Penn State, that's a good opportunity with the chance to rest and prepare and all that stuff. And I think Penn State, for the most part, comes out, you know, hungry and prepared for these bowl games, which is one of the big variables when you're not playing in a big one, is how well you treat the game itself. Yeah. And Penn State treats them well.
And Dustin, I mentioned the Washington State thing. The reason why that's so important is because now Washington or Utah will grab one of those automatic spots to the Rose Bowl. So, you know, the Pac-12 was looking at grabbing just one as it was, but with Washington beating Washington State, now do they want the Cougars in one of these things to grab a second spot, like right. the Fiesta Bowl? They don't have to travel very far to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I just think at this point, it's just, like I said, it's hard to figure, until you see the results and what kind of ping-ponging happens. And the committee is just, it's very hard to figure out. I didn't think Penn State would be 12 last week. I honestly thought they'd be 14.
I'm shocked. So they then went
when they moved to 12, then you start wondering, well, is the thing like, and this is obviously, we're talking New Year's Six and Citrus, not college football playoff spot or New Year's Six Bowl, but you start thinking of the TCU where they drop, you know, they're in and they dropped them, and there's just so many variables at play. Penn State, of course, has to sit at home now and wait and see how these conference championships games shake out. And God forbid if Northwestern beats Ohio State, then it's going to, and it really becomes a mess.
Or if Texas beats Oklahoma. Right. I mean, so that's another one, too. If Texas beats Oklahoma, now the Big 12 is going to be grabbing two of those spots. Right. So that's why it looks increasingly likely that you're looking at one of those Florida bowl games.
I'm pro mess in all these scenarios. I think I've talked about that before.
Finally, Dustin got chaos.
Pro chaos, and I want the more of it, the better, because I want to get to an 18 playoff. Sooner than later. Let's talk Penn State Maryland a little bit more in depth. I thought one of the intriguing storylines. Well, first of all, I want to talk about the defense and finishing with 15 tackles for loss. And they were disruptive, and they outmatched Maryland's offensive line. I think that's pretty clear. I think it was clear on the other side of the ball, too, that Penn State's offensive line was pushing guys around. But I think, you know, as you mentioned with the jet sweeps and you mentioned with all the outside stuff, they had a plan and they were disciplined and they were patient and they held up very well against an attack that just gashed Ohio State. And I thought, you know, once you're able to take them out of that element a little bit, it's a one-dimensional team. You know, Penn State's played a bunch of one-dimensional teams and has largely played them well, but they beat Maryland at their own game. They limited Anthony McFarland. 6 carries for 12 yards. This is 298 against Ohio State. 200 plus in 2 straight games was a absolute non-factor in this game, and you give a lot of credit to the way that Penn State handled Brent Pry's game plan, and you give a lot of credit to Brent Pry.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Penn State just from start to finish, you know, I think they maybe hit one speed sweep that picked up a first down, but other than that, Penn State didn't look confused at the line of scrimmage. It did not, you know, get out of the gaps. I think James Franklin mentioned Micah Parsons may have once or twice, and Maryland hit him for a decent-sized play. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, Penn State was gap sound. It was accountable. And all the things that went wrong when Matt Canada's Pitt offense gashed Penn State 2 years ago, it was nowhere to be found. And I think that Pitt team probably would handle this Maryland team. I mean, I don't think that can be dismissed. But, I mean, for, you know, all intents and purposes, Penn State took what it could from that 2016 game and obviously all the tape this season of Matt Canada and was able to really make them, like you said, Dustin, one-dimensional.
Well, there's been way too many games where the secondary has been the leader in tackles at the end of the game, somebody in the secondary. And you know, look, Etor Gross Matos just dominant, and they couldn't get through him, past him, around him. He had, you know, TFLs everywhere. And it was refreshing to see. Yeah, I mean, it was refreshing to see. And, you know, you mentioned the linebackers, and that's probably the part that I enjoyed watching the most, is that, you know, you didn't see them out of position a lot, even if they were just getting a piece of the runner. You're just slowing them down. I mean, Maryland has big-time speed, game-breaking speed, and they never really got out past the linebackers and in the secondary, you know, where they were out of position as well. When they did break off a chunk, 10, 15 yards, oh well, and then they still had them down. So when you saw them against Ohio State, just, whew, they got past the linebackers and they were gone. So,
and on the other side, 310 rushing yards for Penn State. I didn't see whether that was a season high or what, but I have to imagine it was close. 7 yards a carry. It started up front. You know, I felt like there were a lot of times where guys could have just fallen down and gotten 3 or 4 yards out of it. But Miles Sanders ran well. It did have the fumble in this game, and it's a trend that continues. I'm curious your thoughts just on ball security, and you know, there's a possibility of him declaring early for the draft. I wonder where ball security factors in there, and then with Ricky Slade coming in and giving just a completely different type of burst and style, and 64 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had disappeared for a while, but this running game, including what you mentioned earlier, Todd, was with McSorley posing a big threat and running for two scores. It was everything they wanted it to be.
Yeah, no question. I think Penn State's game, their running game, is in good hands whether Miles Sanders decides to stay or go, because Ricky Slade, if he decides to leave, it looks like he's ready to step into a bigger role. Devin Ford, obviously the big time running back from Virginia, is coming in. So I think Penn State's set to go either way. Miles Sanders said he did not think about whether that was his last game at Beaver Stadium. So his decision, if he's made it, he's not tipping his hand. And if he did not make it, then he's not ready to get that far yet. But I think outside of the ball security guys, he's probably going to go. I think that's probably the biggest knock.
I think he can 100% handle running at the next level.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. I mean, this is not somebody who's small, and you mentioned the ball security. Those things can be cleaned up. And, oh, by the way, did we see some Penn State guys have some decent measurables at the combine last year? Yeah, a few of them did okay. And this is somebody, this isn't somebody who's just, this is third year out of high school, right? A redshirt junior. He's had a long time away from school. And it's funny because I get a chance to talk to that age group, and you talk, like, your education when you go to school leads to employment, right? Well, he's ready to be employed and ready to be paid for his services playing football. If that's what his next job is going to be, you know, there's college grads that have been through 4 years of school that are looking to get a job for 30, 40 grand out of school. Well, he's going to make a lot more than that, even if he's a mid-round selection. But his measurables are going to be pretty solid. And he's had some highlight reel type runs that are pretty good, that are going to look good.
Just quickly on the other side of the ball, development of this defense over time, and then this particular effort. You saw Kevin Givens, two sacks in this game. He and Robert Windsor, I think Windsor in particular, his development over the course of the season changed the complexion of the defense. Certainly Sharif Miller has been as advertised, and Yutor Gross-Matos has become – he's become a star, you know, and he eclipsed 20 tackles for loss. He's just lived in opponents' backfield. But just that mix and how the rise of this defensive line has changed the complexion of this defense. And you got to feel good about it. Wherever they go in a bowl game, whoever they play, this defensive line will come to play.
And I know they like to get rotations in there, guys, but you got a solid four starters right there. So if you can just get some people to give them some breaks here and there and keep them fresh, you got an imposing defensive line for the next year.
This group is underrated as it can get. And I am hard-pressed to think at least one of these guys doesn't go early to the NFL draft. I mean, Kevin Givens, Sharif Miller, both, I think, will at the minimum test the waters and get an opinion from the College Draft Advisory Board and see what the word is on their draft stock. But these guys have been maybe underrated a little bit as the Penn State defense has really taken steps forward. You're right. You talk about Gross-Matos living in backfields. Heck, Givens has been, you know, a guy that doesn't necessarily put up the stats, but in terms of helping his teammates put up the stats by being where he's supposed to be and doing what he's supposed to do, feels like he does his job every single time.
Those guys, plus the, you know, Micah Parsons coming in at linebacker, it's changed this defense for good. By the way, Penn State got a new commitment, first commitment in the 2020 class to start the weekend, Grant Toutant, 3-star offensive lineman from Michigan. We're moving on here on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Looking around the Big Ten, coming up after this.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football. Flannel. Beards. Tailgating. Oh yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Because it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA. Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change, which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
This is Jim from Keystone Sports. In partnership with GoPSU RV, we are introducing the Keystone Sports Network RV. All the benefits of the GoPSU RV lot, along with great gift items like catered meal from 409 Barbecue, barbecue gift box, wine gift box, and of course, Labatt beer. Hear all about the KSN RV? Email me at info@ksnsports.net, or you could also reach out with the Contact Us button on your KSN app.